Welcome to Banfield. Whoopi Goldberg is back, but which Whoopi is it? The comedian made her first appearance on The View today since completing a two-week suspension for making comments about race and the Holocaust that her network considered hurtful. Ironically, though, that suspension became an even bigger deal than her controversial comments. Some people said a two-week suspension amounted to nothing more than a slap on the wrist, while others said it was overly harsh to silence a TV commentator who is literally paid to give her view. For 2 weeks now, viewers have waited to see if the suspension would make a difference. Would she remain an outspoken, boundary-pushing comedian who doesn't shy away from giving her opinion? Or would she reinvent herself as a thoughtful commentator who knows when to toe the line? And the answer is, I don't know. Because despite The View's mission to dig deep and discuss the day's issues, Whoopi's suspension really didn't come up today. Instead, Whoopi just talked about the show itself. I don't know if that's Stockholm Syndrome or what, but instead of the resolution that ABC may have been hoping for, we're left with even more questions. What did Whoopi do during her time off? Did she seek out other voices? Has she changed her mind about things? What about the elephant in the room? Is everything exactly the same as it was before she was punished? I want to bring in Maureen Callahan. She's a writer and editor and critic at large with the New York Post. Mike Paul is the president of the Reputation Doctor PR agency. And Stan Zimmerman is a writer and producer who's worked on The Golden Girls, Roseanne, and Gilmore Girls as well. Welcome to all three of you. So, Maureen, I'm going to start with you. And first of all, I shake in my boots at the fact that you're on my show because I'm always terrified that I may one day end up in your column. So let's just call this a truce so that we can interview. And please, 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 I hope it goes well. So, okay, Maureen, The View is all about the news, right? They take on big news topics and then they chew on them. And I think the biggest news of the day, specifically for The View, was what happened on The View. She came back and they didn't chew. What'd you make of that?
You know, I thought it was very typically Whoopi. I remember watching that segment in question when she asserted that the Holocaust was not about race. And all of her other co-hosts tried to get her to walk that back and to interject and to say, no, 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 Whoopi. And she wasn't having it. And I think really what we're seeing here is the sort of the bubble of privilege that she's lived in. You know, she's been famous for most of her adult life. She doesn't really hear the word no. She doesn't really understand that she's in the wrong. She went on Colbert the next night and doubled down, saying that, you know, it was white on white violence. And because of that, the Nazis really had to do the work in order to find the Jews they wanted to exterminate. I mean, she just sort of kept putting her foot in her mouth. So I was not surprised at all to see her return today and sort of soft pedal and continue to, you know, evade an actual apology.
I was like looking at it like a tennis match, waiting, like, when are they going to talk about this? Like, that's what I came for. And, it, you know, on the show went. So, Stan, let me ask you this. When Whoopi was suspended, the president of ABC, Kim Godwin, said this, and I'll read her words specifically. While Whoopi has apologized, I've asked her to take time to reflect and learn about the impact of her comments. And today, you know, Whoopi said she spent time listening, but we're not so sure about the learning part. And I wondered if you thought that it's unsatisfying if the learning part isn't public or if they were right to just go about their business and move on.
Well, I think the learning part was already there the next day after she made those comments. She had somebody from the Anti-Defamation League. She talked about what she had learned and she wanted to learn more. I have a different point of view of this in that I don't think we should have put her in timeout as Kim Godwin. I guess she was taking her last name literally. Give her time on the air to talk about it. Today was about coming back and saying where she was. Hopefully there'll be many discussions on the show about this topic because as a Jew, it is a very important topic. And what is race? I'm not a practicing Jew, but I still feel Jewish. So I think this is something that can't be done in 2 or 3 minutes on one show, and especially not the first day she's back.
Well, I mean, I encourage everyone to Google what is race, because I learned a few things, you know, from when I was in high school, when I was told there were only three, And then I learned how it is really morphed by social science all around the world to the point where it's almost indiscernible how many races there are, depending on who you talk to. So, you know, I got a learning moment out of Whoopi's business.
And that was where she was talking from her point of view, literally her view, in her shoes at that moment. And that's all we can expect. I had a lot of people say she should know better. Well, you learn when you learn. And I think she's learning right now. We're watching it. Don't we want people to learn and change in front of us?
Yeah. Well, there's Mike Paul clapping because, Mike, I had a feeling you were going to say it's called The View. So if you're not free to express views or for fear of or trepidation of tripping on you know, tripwires, the show's going to stink. But reputation-wise, ABC had a tough, you know, they found themselves as a sticky wicket. What would you have advised ABC to do, Mike?
Well, first of all, I agree with Stan. The apology was 2 weeks ago. This was a time of punishment. And she came back from her time of punishment, whether she liked it or not, by her bosses. I give her an A-plus for how she's handled it to date. There are many that believe that she shouldn't have had to have 2 weeks off at all. As you say, the name of the program is The View. This is more about heart work than head work. And the beautiful thing that she did and why I give her an A-plus is that she not only apologized, she not only took the time to learn herself, she used her platform to educate so many more people. That's critical. Most people in these situations, especially anchors, and Ashley, you and I know many anchors who have gotten into trouble over the years, usually do not have bosses nor themselves comfortable to continue the conversation. They want it to go away as quickly as possible. I give ABC kudos for at least using the platform to educate people. And here's the education moment. The Aryan race, Nazis, decided after 6 million, sadly, Jewish people died, their message was, we are a superior race. We are the Aryan race. We will test blood even to see almost like a one-drop rule like black folks here in the United States know so well to find out if you're Jewish. You are lesser than us. You are below us. We made it race. And it was important for Whoopi to understand not just blacks and Latinos and others of color, but to understand that message. And she was patient enough and humble enough to allow Jewish leaders to have that education moment for herself, and then she shared it with the world. Kudos for her for doing so.
I wish you'd been on. I wish you'd been on the show to say exactly that. And Maureen, I think this is where I sort of came up flat today, because again, if it's a teachable moment, a learning moment, it felt very much today as if it were a, oh, let's make this go away moment. And that wasn't the way, you know, it was, you know, described back when it happened. So I'm still trying to figure out if it was punishment or if it was ABC worried about having to do something, anything. So why don't we just do this?
Yes. And, you know, just to quickly piggyback on that last thought, you know, yes, the show is called The View, but to quote the late Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, you may be entitled to your opinion, but you are not entitled to the facts. The other thing I want to say is Whoopi has said many, many offensive things in the past. She's defended Mel Gibson. She has said Roman Polanski wasn't guilty of rape. She defended Michael Vick. So, you know, this is all part of sort of the traveling carnival that is The View. They are not a panel full of academics or historians or journalists. They're actors and they're really kind of show people.
So I don't get it. I mean, tough conversations are tough conversations, Stan. And I'm going to get to you in a second, Mike. But Stan, just weigh in on this part, because I'm not so sure anyone's going to feel comfortable having a tough conversation, especially if you're a really high paid host or if you're a guest that wants to keep coming back on The View.
Well, that was my point. She should not have been punished. She should have stayed there and kept having the tough conversations. But we're living in a world now where you can't talk about race in schools. There's currently laws happening in Florida where you can't talk about being gay. And if we don't talk about it, there's going to be continued stigma and continued suicide. And I'm a big proponent of having, like she said, having those messy conversations. And I think today was one step towards it, which she'll have many more hopefully on the show.
Yeah, Mike, you were going to say something.
Well, first of all, that was only 2 minutes of a show that's obviously longer than 2 minutes, number one. And number two, we have to be, I see it totally differently. this is also a business. That was a message from her bosses. That was also a message for sponsors. That was a safe message. It was a message that said, we're going to remind the public what the show is in the first place. And that's all it was. And then they went back into their views. They didn't do that for the entirety of the show. Sorry to disappoint everybody. The apology was 2 weeks ago. Today was about getting back to business, and the bosses had a strong message of, this is why this show exists, this is who we are. And then they went into their various views after that.
That's well, all. What is it saying to other people that come on and say, I've learned, I apologize? Why do you punish people after they've already admitted and went to someone from the Jewish Defense League? So that's what
I'll answer that. It's not just about Whoopi. As I said, it's a TV show. It makes money. It has sponsors. Let's also talk about the 800-pound gorilla that's in the room. There is a large portion of the news community and the Hollywood community that is Jewish. They're powerful. They're good people. They're a part of the show as well. They understand their audience. It was a powerful message that needed to happen. And there was a business message that happened today. They wanted to be more safe after going through a crisis. And today was about a message from bosses and sponsors for at least the first 2 minutes of the program, and they wanted to move on. That's my translation of what happened.
And Maureen, I'd love you to weigh in on this, because us folk in the media business, we all gossip about what's going on. And when the, you know, what hits the fan, we talk even more. And say what you will about Roger Ailes, but the one thing that he used to do, he would double down, and he would always back his guys, and he would say, throw down, double down, just work it, because it's fomenting lots of discussion out there. And I'm wondering, Maureen, if you're going to watch that show with more of an eagle eye, saying, look, you weren't doing so well, the numbers haven't been great on The View, you're hemorrhaging people and trying to fill co-host spots, etc. This could have been a business decision where you actually did go all the way on this discussion and this debate and this controversy and go on cancel culture and all the rest. Instead, you decided to play it safe. And a show like The View, I don't know, call me crazy, but I don't think it should be safe.
Well, it's also owned by Disney.
I think that ABC was riding a line here. You know, I mean, we are sort of grappling with what cancel culture is and whether it should even exist. And if we aren't going to cancel somebody, but should there be some sort of retribution? You know, the ABC clearly had to show they took this very, very seriously. Whoopi was not pleased that she was suspended. Her co-hosts were not pleased that she was suspended. But here's the thing. The View has always been about the headlines the women at the table make. It's never really the substance of any conversation. It's always been about the infighting. It's always been about what's going on behind the scenes, who's leaking what to Page Six, power plays, or faux pas, such as, you know, rape. So, you know, in the end, this will just be yet another controversy that does go away. But it's all very much in keeping with what The View is really best known for.
Yeah, you know, I'm interested, Stan.
I hope it doesn't go away. I hope we learn. I literally went online and Googled blacks and the Holocaust. As someone that was bar mitzvahed, I didn't know anything about it. So I think, you know, just the fact that we're having this discussion has opened up a new world for people. And I hope we keep
the fact that you wrote for Roseanne brings a whole other aspect into this discussion. And that was, Roseanne said something that was beyond the pale, and that was it. She got career suicide. Roseanne was gone, not the show Roseanne, just the Roseanne part of it. Some people weigh in saying, well, when you're conservative, you really get hit harder. But then others will point to Senator Al Franken and say, are you kidding me? But how, I mean, you're the closest to this. I mean, you wrote for Roseanne. How do you feel about that?
I think it's different with Roseanne. I think she was making a joke and then she didn't own it. And that was my viewpoint at the time.
And I
said, why can't she take this as a teachable moment? And if she didn't know Valerie Jarrett was black, so now she does. And why, if it's offensive to somebody, why can't we be sensitive, even if it wasn't sensitive to her? So again, it's grabbing those moments, because otherwise we're pushing it down the road, kicking the can, and we're going to keep talking about racism and anti-Semitism, and even going back to, I wrote on the Golden Girls. Why were the Golden Girls Italian and not Jewish? Sophia Petrillo. Because the writers were afraid of making those characters Jewish. So, it, you know, we're still, you know, 35 years later on the same topic.
Yeah. Yeah, Mike, one last comment, because I could see you wanted to jump in there.
Well, I love what he had to say about Roseanne, and I'm sure he would agree, you know, Eagle before the fall. Again, I give Whoopi an A-plus for how she handled it. Whether her bosses were guiding her or not, she had to own it in the end. And she was humble about it in the end. She made it a teachable moment, not only for herself, but for all. And kudos for her for doing so.
And she didn't blame Ambien. Well,
that's right.
Good one. Hey, all three of you, great conversation. Thank you for that. And look, we all got through it. And I suspect that, Maureen, we're not going to end up in your column tomorrow. We're all okay, clean. Whoosh, we made it.
Oh, Ashley, thank you so much for having me. Never.
I love reading your work. I'm going to tell you, it's almost like sport. Oh. Maureen Callahan, Mike Paul,
thank you so much. Zimmerman,
thank you. Thank you all three. And I'm going to have you all three back real soon. Appreciate you coming.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to turn now to this other story that we've been following, it feels like, for a very long time. But this was a bit of a surprise. We weren't supposed to get a surprise in the autopsy report for the only suspect in Gabby Petito's death, right? We weren't. But Brian Laundrie's full autopsy was released today, and yes, there were some very bizarre findings. Back in October, you'll probably remember, partial human remains were discovered in the Florida Reserve, where authorities had conducted an exhaustive search for the 23-year-old fugitive. Those remains were matched to Laundrie through dental records, and it was determined that he had died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. But now, we're learning a lot more about the condition and the location of those remains and what else was found with him. The autopsy report is 47 pages long, and it says that dozens of human bones were recovered, many of them spread out into different areas, and several of them displaying signs of animal activity, like gnaw marks on the bones inflicted post-mortem by everything from animals to insects. The bones were, quote, in plain sight and scattered upon the dirt, originally 3 feet underwater. Alongside the remains, the authorities said that they found, quote, a pair of green shorts with a green belt, two slip-on shoes, a backpack with unknown contents, presumably because the FBI might have taken them, a white metal ring, and a snub-nosed revolver that was rusted. In a secondary scene, the authorities found a hat with a logo reading Moab Coffee Roasters. That I find sad because we all know what happened in Moab, right? That was the last time we saw Gabby on tape, and it was not a happy environment. She was crying. She said she hit him first, and they went on their way, and soon she'd be dead. According to the report, authorities also found several other items that belonged to Laundrie at the site. We already knew about the infamous notebook, right? We'd been waiting to find out what was in it. They dried it out. They said it was salvageable. Medical examiner called it a journal. But according to the report, they also found half of a handwritten note. They found a wooden box. And inside that wooden box, photographs, including a photo of Brian Laundrie himself. And they also found a second smaller notebook. The FBI recently revealed that in one of those two notebooks, Laundrie admitted killing his fiancée, Gabby Petito. But we don't know what was in the half-written note. We don't know what was in the other notebook. Still, these are all secrets. I don't know if we're ever going to know. Gabby's body was found in Grand Teton National Park back in September. Medical examiner had ruled her death homicide by strangulation. And Laundrie was the sole suspect. The FBI used his handwritten confession to close the case on her death. But here is one last curious thing we found out today. Very curious indeed. Medical examiner said that Brian Laundrie's parents were asked some questions, and they refused to answer the questions. The questions were about Brian's social history before he died. So presumably mom and dad are going to keep that to themselves. Still ahead tonight, think twice before you put a ring on it. I'm speaking of the video doorbell device that caught this man kissing his girlfriend on the front porch of the house that he would very soon be locked out of. Uh-huh. As cheaters go, this guy was an amateur. When we return, the story of a world-class con man who had families all around the globe and the one wife he never should have double-crossed. Welcome back. Will Jordan didn't have a white horse or shining armor, but he might as well have. When he rode into Mary Turner Thompson's life 22 years ago in Scotland, he was exactly the right man at exactly the right time. The two met on a dating site. They were both 35. Mary had a one-year-old daughter and was just off of a bad relationship. She said that Will, quote, showered me with love right from the very beginning, before I'd even met him. He sent me long, flowing emails about his past and about the person he was, and I told him my dreams and aspirations. We wrote 3, 4, 5 times a day. It became intoxicating. I was swept away by the romance of it. And then they got married and lived happily ever after. And let's scratch that last part. They got married all right. He proposed within a month, on Christmas Eve, right after standing Mary up when they were supposed to take a nice romantic trip to London. Later, he'd send roses to her office and then blow off their engagement party. Mary calls it a, quote, cycle of love, bombing, and gaslighting. And still, they got married in 2002. Will said he was infertile, but he and Mary had 2 children in 3 years. He said he worked in IT, really good job with the CIA, and had pay stubs to prove it. The job required travel, lots and lots and lots of travel. After their son Zach was born in 2005, Will added a cruel twist to his I work at the CIA story. He said evildoers were after their children and Mary had to sell her apartment to pay them off. So she ended up selling everything that she had of value, including her life insurance. And then she was dead broke. By 2006, Will suddenly had some problems of his own. He was facing charges of bigamy, fraud, and failing to register as a sex offender. But all of it was bogus, he said, either a misunderstanding or, I don't know, something set up by the CIA. And then came the phone call. Mary remembers it well. April 5th, it was a Wednesday. The caller asked whether Mary was, quote, Mrs. Jordan. And when Mary said yes, the caller on the other end of the line said, I'm the other Mrs. Jordan. And then Mary Turner Thompson's life, which was barely holding together as it was, fell utterly apart. She learned that Will and the other Mrs. Jordan had been married for 14 years and had 5 kids. The other Mrs. Jordan had been pregnant, in fact, when Will met Mary. The other Mrs. Jordan had a nanny who was also pregnant by Will. And all 3 of them figured out that they were pregnant at the same time in 2002. Ugh. And if this isn't bad enough, there were about to be more Mrs. Jordans, 5 more, because Will had 5 fiancés. And by Mary's count, a total of 13 children. She also discovered that Will had taken out credit cards in her name and put her tens of thousands of dollars into debt. Later that year, still 2006, Will pleaded guilty in Scotland to charges that he claimed were just fake. Nonetheless, he went to prison for 2.5 years only. And when he got out, guess where they deported him? Here, the United States. Ugh. When Mary decided to write a book called The Bigamist, other women suddenly started coming out of the woodwork with their own stories involving one Will Jordan. Mary now knows of at least 14 victims over the past quarter century and has every reason to believe that Will Jordan is acquiring new ones as we speak. So how do you know whether you are dating a Will Jordan? Oh God, how do you know if you're dating Will Jordan himself? Mary Turner Thompson's going to join me after the break and tell you all about him. Like love itself, betrayal takes many forms, be it a tryst in the marital home, which was revealed to the world by this doorbell cam. What an idiot. or a multinational web of bigamy and fraud that breaks not only hearts, but bank accounts and lives as well. And speaking of hearts, not all the damage here is emotional or financial. What some call broken heart syndrome is a real thing, and it can be lethal. I'm joined now by three women with hard-won insights on all of this. Mary Turner Thompson, on the left here, had been married for 4 years to the man of her dreams when she found out he had another wife, another five fiancés, and, well, a total so far of 13 children. Her latest book is called The Psychopath, and it is great reading. Kaylee Christina discovered her husband was cheating last fall when she took a look at their Ring doorbell cam while she was on the family vacation he was too sick to attend, and captured him bidding farewell to a scantily clad woman who was not Kaylee. She posted the clip on TikTok with the caption, aptly, "When your husband is too sick to go on the family trip you planned." A few days later, she posted, "Locks have been changed and he no longer resides here." Needless to say, those went viral. We're also joined on the far right by Sharon Hayes, the founder of the Women's Heart Clinic at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. So welcome to all three of you. Mary, I'll begin with you. The story that I just recounted before the break had even our control room producers sort of dropping their jaws and saying, that can't be true. It really does feel like it can't be true, but it is. I'm wondering, I mean, you wrote the Psychopath, and before that, the Bigamist, and these are popular books about this ordeal, and people have been coming out of the woodwork. Do you have a latest case count on how many women he has swindled, and if he's still out there doing it? Do you have any idea like where he is?
Yeah, got a rough idea. He's I believe somewhere in the kind of New Jersey area. We know of 14 children now. The youngest is about 3 years old, born to a 19-year-old in New Jersey. He's still at it. He never will stop. That's what he does. So,
I mean, he just sounds like a serial predator. And, you know, to think that he's just kind of free to ply his trade in the New Jersey area or anywhere, you know, around the world. How is it that they can't catch up with him and put a stop to this? Because this isn't just cute love. This is damaging. It's financial destruction. It's emotional harm. There can be a lot that comes from this. And then there are all these children at risk as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's emotional terrorism, what he does. The reason it can't be stopped, it's so difficult to stop him, is the fact that he sails very, very close to the wind in legal terms. So, for instance, when it first came to court here in the UK, it is not actually illegal to defraud your own wife in the UK. So he didn't actually get done for the money he took from me. He got
That's
done for the bigamy and the fraud and other things. Yeah. Sorry, 3 a.m. in the morning.
I appreciate you getting up in the middle of the night overseas. And thank you for that. So let me ask you, Kaylee, when I saw the video, I just couldn't imagine the moment you saw it for the first time. And what you went through, there's just so much to process. You know, you're a mom of two kids, 7 and 3 years old, and boom, your whole life is kind of blowing up in front of you. Were there any red flags or anything beforehand that led you to think this might be possible, or was this just an utter gut punch?
I kind of had this gut feeling, this intuition that there was something off, but when I would express that out loud, he would just say, "I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about." But he started acting jumpy with his phone. We go on family walks and he wouldn't go on them anymore. So that's pretty much, I mean, I had a gut feeling, but other than that, I didn't have proof until I saw the Ring footage.
Yeah. And of course, that's the playbook, right? Just gaslight you if you dare to question. It's your fault. You're the idiot. You're the crazy one, right? That's typically how it works. So I do have this question about, like, I don't know if you knew this was going to, you know, go viral, but how have you been able to insulate your kids against it?
I've been very careful. I don't film any TikToks about it if they're home. I try to just keep our life as normal as it was before everything kind of blew up.
Yeah, it's a hard. I mean, listen, there's a lot at stake, right? That's why there's so many emotions that fly through when you are confronted with this reality. Dr. Hayes, I called it that cute little expression, right? Broken heart syndrome, which gets all the press and the headlines and all the rest. And you are you're one of those people who says that it's really a bad term because it makes light of something that's very, very real. Can you explain what's very real about this broken heart syndrome?
So I will just say that the women on this show have experienced truly heartbreaking experiences. And what we know, and particularly among women, is that acute and chronic stress can lead to types of heart attacks that are much more common in women. And one is called stress cardiomyopathy, which is also known as Takotsubo and broken heart. And another is when an artery actually tears and causes a heart attack called spontaneous coronary artery dissection. So these are often triggered by emotional stress, anger, fear, tragedy, COVID, and all of the things and the fears that go along with that. And when patients of mine talk about what was happening in the days or the day or the weeks before they experienced these events, some of them have said, I was going through my most stressful period in my entire life.
Makes perfect sense. Mary, do you are you watching out for your physical health? Hearing what you've just heard from Dr. Hayes, I mean, you've been through hell and back, and there's got to be some residual pain from that. Have you been careful about your physical health too?
I became a black belt in Taekwondo in 2010. I figured if I was ever going to open the door to him again, I needed to know how to defend myself. So I'm quite fit. But I also, writing the book is the most cathartic thing you can ever do. Mm-hmm. And it got it all out of my head, all out of my subconscious, onto the paper. And I don't have to worry about it anymore. I don't have to think about it because I know it's physically somewhere else. And I thoroughly recommend anyone who's gone through any trauma write it down because it is incredibly helpful to do that.
You're amazingly strong. And just quickly, to you, Kaylee, you're pretty new in all of this. Are you watching out for yourself, not only your mental health after this, but your physical health too?
Yes, I am. I've been following up. I had, obviously you have to go get STD tested and then, just your regular well checks. And with COVID and everything, it's been hard to get in, but I have been following up with my doctor.
Well, hopefully you've got a community out there that are very supportive, especially people, all these people you don't know who are so, supportive of you. I appreciate all three of you for coming on tonight. Thank you, Mary Turner Thompson. Thank you, Kaylee Christina and Dr. Sharon Hayes. Appreciate all your insight.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so police in Georgia are all about revenge on this Valentine's Day, and they are asking jilted lovers to snitch on their criminal exes. Don't you just love it? We're going to show you the hilarious campaign to turn former lovebirds into stool pigeons, and we'll find out how well it is working next. You know that old expression, it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all? Well, apparently Alfred Lord Tennyson didn't know the cops in Georgia because police there are telling folks, if you've loved and lost, snitch on your criminal ex this Valentine's Day, and we got you back. Don't take it from me. Take it from the hilarious Facebook post by the Rockmart Georgia PD. Do you have an ex-Valentine and know they have outstanding warrants? Do you have information that they're driving with drugs in their car? Give us a call with their location, and we'll take care of the rest. The shared Instagram post that followed now has over 250,000 likes, and that might be because of the promises that they're making. Check out the ultimate Valentine's Day experience that they're offering. It starts with a set of limited edition platinum bracelets, free transportation with a chauffeur, a one-night minimum stay at a luxurious accommodation. And since it's going to be a night to remember, of course, they'll capture the memories with a professional glamour shot for your Instagram. As clever as the campaign is, it didn't start in Rockmart, Georgia. The original idea came from the Sheriff's Department in Nash County, North Carolina. And one of the officers behind the Valentine's Day initiative is Chief Deputy Brandon Medina, who joins me now live. You are hilarious. I love the way you think. Okay, the big question is, does it work? Are you getting people calling in on their exes?
Well, thank you for having me. I think the first time we posted that about a year ago, we did get some phone calls. And as of 9:30 this evening, we have not received any phone calls as of yet, but the night is still young here in Nash County.
Ooh, I like that. So the night is still young. And by the way, it's not exclusive just to Valentine's Day, right? I mean, the post goes out on Valentine's Day, but you can get after your ex anytime you want, presumably.
Yeah, we're an equal opportunity. If you have an individual that has a warrant, you know, and you happen to know their location and we can verify the actual warrant, we'll go out and make service. And we thought it was kind of cute to make it last year very descriptive in regards to a chauffeur and the 5-star accommodations, and top it off with a Valentine's dinner that we actually reshared it again. And it's our second annual Valentine's Day special.
Oh, please tell me for the Valentine's dinner you get a few sweet tarts for dessert. I bet you don't go that far, do you?
We don't. We offer just the simple things.
Bologna sandwich. I like that. Okay, so I always had this thought that if that post goes out, somebody who really hates his or her ex would call anyway, regardless of whether there's a crime. Because hell hath no fury of a woman's scorn or a dude's. Have you ever had anybody call in and like mess with you because they're just trying to get, you know, make some trouble for their ex and it's not true?
Yeah, but before we take it any action similar to that, we verify that they actually have a warrant in our state repository system. And once that's verified, and then we get a location and we happen to see the individual, you know, we'll do some follow-up. And then if they have a warrant, you know, take them in custody, hopefully without an incident.
Did it ever backfire on any of the callers?
No, but we've had a lot of individuals make comments on our first post from last year and this post. And believe it or not, a lot of the community came back and have told individuals to relax, that, you know, we're trying to make, you know, something humorous for everybody to enjoy. And, you know, for the most part, I'd say 99% of the time we've had a lot of good support and a lot of good comments on there.
I thought I heard something about one of the commenters, you know, trying to get her ex in trouble, turned out to have warned herself.
Yeah, so that case actually happened last year on our first post, which almost hit a million views. And we occasionally will go on there and just check people's names. And she happened to have a warrant. And so we had a nice dialogue back and forth about how she was going to take care of her warrant, that we could send an unmarked vehicle to her home. It would be discreet. And we would, you know, make it to her benefit that, you know, she can go to jail and, you know, stand her case. But a lot of people came to our defense also and, you know, pretty much roasted her online. And then after a short while, she deleted all her messages. So we weren't able to capture those, but it's out there somewhere.
Well, Chief Deputy Brandon Medina, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for being a good sport and thanks for joining us. And good luck. I hope, like you said, the night's young. I hope you get a catch a couple of those fish.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay, coming up, it is almost a guarantee that if you snitch on your ex and turn them in, it's unlikely they'll ever take you back, right? And it got us thinking, what percentage of couples actually do get back together after they split? This one is a bit of a head-scratcher. Going to unwrap the little Valentine's Day present for you next. There is no denying that breakups are the worst. But what percentage of couples that break up eventually get back together? Well, according to Psychology Today, a whopping 40 to 50%. And even more amazing, perhaps, 6% of divorced couples actually remarry each other. That one might be the more bizarre one. That's something to think about as you head off to your Valentine's Day pillow talk. That's our time. Thanks for joining us tonight, everybody. We'll see you right back here tomorrow, 10 Eastern. Have a great day.